black crash helmet, rides a motorcycle down an Oxford street. Kevin Wakely. Pretty dark-haired Polly Beattie spoon-feeds a baby in a single-room halls of residence flat.
Sarah, please. Just a little bit. A little bit, yeah? Good girl, good girl, good girl. Okay. Yeah, good.
Lawrence Fox. Reuben rides the scooter down a street busy with passers-by. Lewis, this story, down among the fearful. Crystal balls freestanding or mounted on stands on a sideboard. Blonde stocky Justine Skinner adds a final demand to an unopened pile of post on a table. She closes a glass cupboard on a tall boy. On the shelf inside is a bundle of papers in a crumpled bag tied with string next to a painted wooden horse. Claire Holman, Rebecca Front.
Were you taken to church as a child?
This is not about indoctrination. God was in my life before I was born.
Is that what they taught you at church? Is God the law?
Yes.
Can he see you doing wrong?
Of course.
A woman is interviewed on camera. Sanjeev Bhaskar, Beattie Edney, Emily Joyce, Dominic Maffam, Tuppence Middleton, Catherine Steadman, Neil Stuke. Reuben returns to the Beattie's little flat.
How's my gorgeous girl? Both my gorgeous girls.
Hello.
Reuben, she's having her lunch. She needs routine.
She needs changing, I'd say.
And Daddy came back just in time, didn't he? He's on toast, okay?
Why not? It was yesterday.
Brown-haired Professor Crane watches the camera interview on a laptop.
Are you afraid of God's judgment?
He is gracious and merciful.
He's also vengeful, angry.
Like any concerned parent.
Yes.
One who imposes irrational rules no child can follow.
It's up to us to rationalize what's in the Bible. The essence of faith is love.
Vicky, the dark-haired interviewer, makes a note. Crane smiles. Inspired by the Inspector Morse novels of Colin Dexter. At home, Justine takes a sip of wine and spreads out a pack of tarot cards on a purple cloth. She pulls out and turns over a card featuring a man with a bindle stick across one shoulder. The Fool. Screenplay by Simon Block, Catherine Tregana. Polly looks apprehensive as Reuben retrieves a mobile from his jacket pocket and takes a call from Vicky.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Beattie. It's me. Don't forget your first one's in half an hour.
Yeah, I'm on my way.
Vicky hangs up.
Who's that?
Vicky, there's a department meeting. She was just reminding me.
Reuben makes to go.
Reuben.
Polly holds out his crash helmet. He collects it and kisses her on the head.
Love you.
Polly toys with a pot of baby food and stares worriedly after him as he goes. Produced by Chris Burt. Hathaway drives along an Oxford street in a red saloon. Lewis is in the passenger seat.
I think your CD must be scratched.
I think you find the repetition meditative.
Meditative's another word for monotonous. And yes, very
highly effective in combating stress.
But I'm not stressed.
You don't think you're stressed. You've assimilated it.
God, man, watch out!
Hathaway breaks sharply as a blonde steps in front of the car. A green Land Rover drives into the back of them.
Come on!
Directed by Brian Kelly. Reuben parks outside a green building with white windows and goes inside. In a comfortably furnished office on the top floor, he sits opposite blonde, sorrowful Mandy.
There is someone trying to get through. She's a little disorientated. She didn't expect to go so soon.
Can you see her? Does she look okay now?
She's standing on a road. There was an accident?
Yes. A car crash.
She's in a safe and peaceful place. Anytime you need to talk. If you can get a word in edgeways.
That's Tina for you. I can't thank you enough, Mr. James.
Randolph, please.
On the street.
Thanks. Not the best way to get a copper's number.
It wasn't her fault. It was when we crossed the road. She's
sounding a bit tense, James. Do you remember to grab your CD from the car?
Brilliant.
Mac. Who's Mac? Was anyone in your family known as Mac?
My name's McLean.
I'm sensing an older man, grey hair. I can smell smoke.
Sounds familiar.
He's very proud of you, Frank.
It can't be my dad, then.
Well, I think it is. He's saying he appreciates everything you did for him towards the end, but it was a great relief to go.
To escape my mother.
He's laughing. He loves you very much. He's with family now, on the other side.
This is so strange.
It shouldn't be.
You see, my dad is in the pub down the road.
Polly's in a laundrette with young wheelchair user Josh.
So, I looked through his phone.
Pog.
Found a text message from his colleague, Vicky. She's pretty, super bright.
So are you.
With lovely shiny hair that doesn't smell baby sick.
What did it say?
This afternoon was fun. Can't wait to do it again.
Right.
And a kiss. Not a word to Mum.
Hell no. She'd kill to have you back home. You and Sarah.
Give us our little flea pit any day. You better not be cheating, Josh. Not after everything I've given up for him.
D.S. Hathaway is in a coffee bar. He collects a couple of paper cups and joins Detective Inspector Lewis on the cobbled Oxford street.
Neck okay, is it? After your shunt?
Mm-hmm.
Give it time.
Susan, a slim 40-something woman with short black hair in dreadlocks, arrives at the green building. She climbs the stone steps to the front door, heads inside and up the stairs to the top floor. The door to Reuben's office is ajar. Susan knocks.
Hello? Mr. James?
Reuben is slumped in a swivel chair.
Mr. James? Mr. James?
She puts a hand on his shoulder and his head lolls lifelessly. His skin is pale, his eyes wide open and vacant. Outside, a uniformed Bobby gestures to a squad car. He opens the door for Hathaway, who slips into the front seat. An officer plays out a strip of police tape to cordon off the street. Amongst onlookers is a man with short black hair who takes a photo with a smartphone. Susan is sitting on the back seat of the car.
The door was open?
Yes, so I went in.
Do you see anyone in the building?
No, no one at all.
Any lights on in any of the other offices?
I don't think there were.
You've been here before?
Yes. I come to talk to Jeff.
Who's Jeff?
My husband.
Does he work here too?
No, he's dead. Randolph James is a psychic.
Oh, right. I'm sorry.
George, found this on the body.
Jeff and I always like to natter. Tell him all my news. About the kids. Footy.
Reuben's credit card.
Randolph James, you say?
Hathaway rubs his neck and makes a face. Dr. Laura Hobson is examining Reuben's body at the crime scene.
Well, he hasn't been shot, strangled, stabbed, beaten, bludgeoned, or had his neck broken.
We're listing all the things that haven't happened to him. Why not include that he hasn't been struck by lightning or savaged by wolves?
Robbie, do I stand in your office asking, have you caught them yet?
What is it about those eyes?
Hathaway arrives, rubbing his neck.
Strong painkillers, warm bath.
That's Robbie sorted. How about you?
Witness identified him as Randolph James, but he's Reuben Beattie on his debit card.
So he's leading a double life?
Randolph James is practicing clairvoyant.
Certainly looks like he's seen a ghost.
Laura lays a strip of clear tape on the shoulder of Reuben's tan-coloured jacket. Hathaway and a WPC.
He was at the department. Maybe it's not Reuben. Someone could have stolen his card.
That's why we need him identified.
Polly looks tentative as Lewis reaches for the handle of a door.
Do you need a minute?
I need to know. Thanks.
Polly hands Sarah over to the WPC, then follows Lewis into an observation room. On the other side of a glass wall is a trolley. Lewis nods to someone in green scrubs, who draws back a cloth covering Reuben's pale features. Polly's face crumples, and she rushes outside to retrieve Sarah from the policewoman.
Mrs. Beattie, is it Reuben?
What happened?
Well, we're still waiting for the autopsy report. Until we decide otherwise, we're treating your husband's death as suspicious.
What was he doing in some office?
Reason to believe that he was moonlighting as a psychic.
That's absurd. He's a junior research fellow at the Department of Psychology. He's a scientist. He investigates systems of belief, why people believe.
Could it have been part of his research?
He never mentioned it. Then again, he was hardly home. Are you sure?
One of his clients found him. She knew him as Randolph James.
Polly takes a seat on a stair.
It just gets worse.
What does?
We'll never have secrets. That's what you said. When love strikes like this, you've got to trust it. Met at a fresher's ball. It took us 6 days to get engaged. And when we went together, we were incomplete. Couldn't function.
Whirlwind romance, eh?
That's what my mum said.
Lewis and Hathaway exchange frowns. A black Land Rover driven by austere blonde Jane Grace pulls up outside the college halls. Joshua is in the passenger seat.
The sooner we get her back home, the better.
Right. Thanks.
Lewis hangs up. He rolls his eyes as Hathaway comes in wearing a surgical collar.
Not one word.
There was no meeting in the Department of Psychology yesterday afternoon. Not cancelled, never scheduled.
Sir Reuben Beattie lied to his wife. Why doesn't that surprise me?
Yeah, poor lass. Lost not only her husband, but all her faith in him, too. Stuck at home with a little then. No idea what he was up to. Probably thinking the worst. If he was moonlighting, she didn't get a whiff of any cash.
Bearing in mind what she was used to, could have driven her to desperation.
Yeah, not to kill, though, surely.
Well, she said her husband investigated people's belief systems. He destroyed hers.
With innocent.
According to the landlord of his office building, Randolph James was 6 months into a 12-month lease. Rent was paid out of a building society in the name of Reuben Beattie.
He and his wife had a joint account, but this one was set up in secret.
And he topped it up weekly with wadges of cash.
So far, no other trace of Randolph James. It seems to be an identity confined to a psychic's chair.
Why would Reuben, the post-grad scientist, moonlight as Randolph the clairvoyant?
Well, lots of scientists have irrational beliefs. Isaac Newton thought the Bible was a cryptogram set by the Almighty.
Walking Wikipedia.
Any more accurate?
We found four sets of 40 quid at the scene, which means he was doing it for the money. He's just taking advantage of the recently bereaved.
Some people are so gullible.
Well, if believing in the spirit will get them through, who are we to knock it?
You're on to his colleagues from the Department of Psychology.
Yeah.
Maybe they had some idea what he was up to. Sorry to hear about your bump.
Thanks, Mum.
Spring back memories, the collar.
Only when it itches.
This is my home. You're not thinking clearly. Why is it whenever I make a decision you don't agree with, I'm not thinking clearly?
This flat belongs to the college. Reuben is no longer a student here.
A little compassion wouldn't go amiss, Mum.
Someone has to keep a clear head.
And we can always rely on that from you.
Yes, actually, Joshua, because I'm the one that brought you up. If I was pushy...
Only you could turn Reuben's death into a platform for your sacrifices as a single mother.
Polly shakes her head in disgust.
At least I got a good settlement out of your dad. Reuben's left you with nothing.
Josh nurses the baby.
You always hated him.
I hated how he rushed you when you had so much potential. They're going to ask you to leave sooner or later.
I can't. Not yet.
I've got your old room ready. You'll have my support. I know how hard it'll be. Think about it, Polly, please.
Reuben's corpse lies beneath a grey cloth on a silver-coloured trolley in an examination room, A cardboard tag bearing his name is tied to the big toe of his exposed right foot. The foot is covered over as Lewis and Hathaway join Laura. She points to a red mark on Reuben's left shoulder.
Apologies for the delay, gentlemen. Took some time to find. But if you screw your eyes up really tight, you'll see a tiny puncture wound.
And a bite?
8mm hypodermic needle.
Delivering what?
An extremely powerful paralyzing agent called M99. Pharmaceutical name, Ritorphin. It's a controlled substance, strictly for use on large mammals.
Ritorphin's a sedative. He didn't seem very sedated when he died.
That's because, first of all, he was fed barbiturate.
How?
Piece of cake.
For you, maybe.
He was fed a piece of cake soaked with barbiturate.
But surely the barbiturate would have eventually stopped him breathing, so why two drugs if you want him dead?
Barbiturates operate in three broad stages. Sedation stage, unconsciousness, and death. Based on his weight and height, I've calculated he was only given enough barbiturate to sedate him.
So his murderer wanted him woozy, but not completely out of it.
Yeah, and then sometime after injected him with a lethal dose of Ritorphin.
Like James said, why not just finish the job with a lethal dose of barbiturate?
Because that would involve a complete loss of control, a lot of wild thrashing about. Could be messy, could be noisy.
Attract unwanted attention.
Mm. Whereas a massive overdose of Ritorphin would shut down respiration in seconds.
Explains the look on his face. If he was conscious enough to know what was happening to him, but unable to do anything to stop it.
But no physical pain. On that front, his murder was as considered as the most compassionate form of euthanasia.
Lewis and Hathaway head down a corridor together.
If this Ritorphin's used to knock out animals, we should get onto all the local vets, see if any significant dosage has gone missing.
Polly is alone in the flat with Sarah. Sarah sits in her baby carrier, looking up at her mum, while Polly pensively stares into space. Polly stirs herself and goes into the flat's kitchenette. She takes down a bottle of red wine from a shelf. A cordless phone rings, but the handset isn't on its cradle.
Guess what? We're not here, but you know what to do and when to do it.
Hello. It's Vicky. Vicky Wormsley from the department. I just wanted to say, Polly, I'm really sorry.
Hello?
Polly scrabbles for the handset beneath piles of papers on a table, but finds it too late. She slams the handset down in frustration. The sun peeps between the gables of a college building of sandy-coloured stone. Inside, Lewis and Hathaway climb a flight of stone steps and head towards a tutor room, where round-faced Professor Crane is lecturing students.
Parapsychology. The study of contested mental phenomena, such as telepathy, near-death experiences, clairvoyance, psychokinesis. If any of you believe in such phenomena, then knock three times. Or should I say, more fool you. No other species lives within such a complex framework of competing beliefs. You will learn, under my guidance, how to conduct a rational attack on the subject's beliefs, thereby identifying the mechanisms that retain them. Thank you very much, that's all.
Lewis and Hathaway hover at the door.
Gentlemen, Professor Cray, Inspector Lewis, this is Detective Sergeant Hathaway.
I didn't have you down as volunteers. It's such a shame about Reuben.
Professor Crane.
This is Vicky. She worked alongside Reuben.
We're sorry for your loss.
Do you know how he was killed?
He was sedated and then given a lethal injection of Ritorphin.
Oh, my God.
Excuse me, that's my sorry.
Crane rejects a mobile call.
It came as a great shock to the department.
Do you have any idea why someone may have wanted him dead?
None whatsoever. He was well-liked, he was very popular. He was one of my best postgrads. A true skeptic.
But you didn't believe in the paranormal?
Of course not.
Were you aware that he was practicing as a psychic in the center of town?
I'm sorry?
There must be some mistake.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm gonna have to take this.
Gentlemen, please. Thank you.
Crane ushers Lewis and Hathaway out.
Excuse me, sorry. Excuse me. Yep.
Polly sits at the table in the flat. She spills her glass of red wine on the sofa as she grabs for the phone.
Vicky?
Who's Vicky?
Hi, Mum.
Darling, it's a truly terrible thing that's happened, but you
need to think about restarting your life.
Yours and Sarah's. She needs you to be strong. Polly?
Polly?
Yeah, okay, Mum.
As Polly clears away wine-stained cushions from the drab grey sofa, she finds a red leather-bound book. She undoes a tie around the book and flicks through the beige-coloured pages. The book is filled with handwritten dates and pairs of initials, some annotated with asterisks. She frowns. Lewis and Hathaway head down the stone steps towards the college exit.
What the hell was Reuben up to? Going out on a limb? Going against everything he ever believed in?
Maybe he was questioning the rationalism imposed on him by Professor Bumptious.
Excuse me?
Vicky hurries after them.
I wasn't as honest in front of Professor Crane as I might have been.
About what?
Reuben. What he was doing. Crane is old school. Conducts all his experiments under laboratory conditions. Our subjects know what they've signed up for. Reuben had this idea that he'd get better results in the field. Real people.
People who've just lost their loved ones in the depths of despair. Nice.
Do you believe in God and afterlife?
No, but I don't believe in conning people either.
How about you?
Don't think that's relevant, is it?
We all know there's nothing after death, but people cling on to the idea. They carry their lives on as normal. Why aren't they running down the street telling people that no one truly dies, or why aren't they killing themselves to be with their deceased loved ones?
Faith and rationality aren't mutually exclusive.
That's what we wanted to investigate, the mechanism that allowed that exact dissonance between what we believe and how we behave.
So you taught Reuben the art of cold reading, rented an office, and stuck an ad in the local press?
Yeah, Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
You took money from people?
To pay the office rent?
Well, it's the best part, $2,000 left over.
Reuben reckoned there was no difference between him or any other clairvoyant. Apart from he knew it was nothing more than a trick. He still helped them.
They stop walking.
Do you have any idea how lonely it feels, having this discussion without him to back me up?
If you want to know what loneliness feels like, ask his wife. And she could have done with some of that money.
She looks at the ground.
Are you having an affair with him?
No.
Do you have any idea who his clients were?
He kept an appointment book. I never saw it, never knew their names.
No, why would you? They weren't important. They were any subject.
Lewis gets a text message as he walks along a pavement outside a college with Hathaway.
That appointment book wasn't in Reuben's office. Maybe he kept it at his flat. Take a look. Was she lying, do you reckon, about an affair?
Not sure, but I do think she loved him.
Vicky's defence of Reuben was that he knew he was exploiting people. That's disturbing.
Find it more disturbing if he actually believed he could talk to the dead.
Mm. Vicky was with Reuben all the time. His wife, Polly, hardly ever saw him.
But would that give her a concrete motive for killing him?
Come on, we're going to the Natural History Museum. Meet Canon Dutter.
Canon Dutter?
The Oxford Campaign for Assisted Dying. He works there.
At the museum...
This Dutter, who did he lose?
Teenage daughter in a diving accident. She was in a persistent vegetative state for a year. Why do you think it's personal?
Most advocates of euthanasia have seen a loved one suffer. It overwhelms their belief in the sanctity of life.
With Canon Dutter...
Sorry for the delay in getting back to you. I presumed you'd got in touch about the campaign.
No, that's not what this is about. We've been investigating a murder where, to all intents and purposes, the victim's been put to sleep. Our pathologist says it has all the hallmarks of euthanasia.
Most murder is unplanned and violent. This was planned and pain-free, sedated with barbiturate, murdered with a torphin.
It's a bit over the top. A single drop can kill a man within seconds.
Are you familiar with the drug?
My wife and I used to work as conservationists in Angola. We often used it to anaesthetize large animals. Elephants, mostly.
The barbiturate was in a slice of cake.
Barbiturates are traditionally bitter-tasting. Sweet cake would disguise that. So the victim was given cake, sedated and then killed? Are you sure it wasn't some form of mercy killing?
He wasn't killed immediately. We have reason to believe he was kept alive for quite some time.
A police forensic investigation van drives away from Ruben's office building. Vicky heads towards the front door and takes a key from her shoulder bag. In the office, a white card bearing the words "Good luck" in colourful letters on the front sits next to a lamp on a brown occasional table. Vicky picks up the card and sinks into a chair. Her face crumples and she puts a hand to her mouth as she reads the handwritten message inside. "Good luck, knock 'em dead, Vicky. Kiss, kiss, kiss."
The whole point of euthanasia is to prevent prolonged suffering. It sounds like your murderer knew the technique and callously abused it. I'm sorry, but Catherine, my wife, is waiting. Was there anything else?
I'm sorry, by the way, about your daughter. It must be, well,
just trying to remember as she was before. Just celebrate that, you know.
What was she like?
She was so full of energy. She came on all our conservation trips from the age of 5. And after the accident, we convinced ourselves there might be a miracle. Classic denial. But as time dragged on, we soon realized that all that lay ahead for Jo was just lying there, wired up to some machine, feeling God knows what, terrified maybe. We knew that life was being needlessly prolonged, but we were refused permission to do anything about it. We wanted to protect her, spare her from suffering.
Any parent would feel the same.
We brought her home. It just felt like the right thing to do. And then fate intervened. Chest infection. Not many people in our situation have that blessing.
Cannon catches the eye of dark-haired Catherine lurking near a stone pillar.
My wife torments herself about it every day. Why weren't we able to do anything to help her?
Whereas you found a way to move on.
At least keep moving.
Cannon moves away to join Catherine. Hathaway frowns thoughtfully.
You still think it's wrong to want to put somebody out of their pain?
Just because I'm uncomfortable with it doesn't make it wrong.
Cannon and Catherine head along a museum gallery.
Who are they?
Detectives.
I don't like the police hounding us at every turn.
It wasn't about the campaign. They just had some technical questions about a murder case. How was your morning?
Oh, well, I made it to the hairdressers. They had no idea what to say, which makes a change.
Lewis and Hathaway are with Chief Superintendent Innocent at headquarters.
Why keep the clairvoyant experiment a secret?
Apparently Crane likes to have his imprimatur on everything.
The plan was to do the research without anybody knowing about it and then make a big splash in their own right with some kind of a book.
Well, why didn't he tell his wife? Were Reuben and Vicky more than just colleagues?
Not according to Vicky.
Somebody went to his office with the sole intention of scaring him half to death before finishing the job off with an animal tranquilizer. There must be some significance to the way he was killed.
We abuse a lot of vulnerable people's trust in there.
We need to know who they are.
Yeah, listen to this. National DNA database has got an ID match on a hair follicle found in Ruben's office. Belongs to a Justine Skinner. She's in our system for breaking into a neighbour's house and killing their cats.
Bring her in.
Innocent goes.
Yeah, I'll do that. You go back to Ruben's flat. Check that uniform didn't miss anything.
Okay.
Still wearing the surgical collar, Hathaway winces as he hauls himself out of his chair. At home, Justine takes a sip of wine and cuts her tarot cards. The card at the bottom of the pile features a man diving from a burning building which has been struck by lightning. The card is marked The Tower. The spire of the college. Vicky heads through a stone arch and up stone steps, passing a suited college porter in a bowler hat. Justine wraps the tarot cards in the purple cloth and puts them carefully in a decorated card box with a red tassel. Vicky heads along the corridor at the college. She stops outside a room and eavesdrops on Crane and a tall, thin man.
Reuben's death, yes. I hope this won't compromise things too much. As you can appreciate, I've...
They spot her.
Thank you, Vicky.
Crane shuts the door on her and she walks away. Justine puts the box of cards in a leather bag and blows out a green candle on her table. The candle smoke drifts into the air. Hathaway steps stiffly out of a lift and heads towards the open door of the Beatty's Halls of Residence flat. He raps on the door with a knuckle. He steps inside. The flat is furnished, but has been stripped of personal effects and bed linen. He goes into the small kitchenette and rummages through a drawer on the sink unit as Polly appears.
You won't find anything. College have cleared it out. All trace of us gone. Like we were never here.
Where are you living now?
My mum's. It's fine. Except for the fact she's there.
Tall, thin Hathaway watches her impassively.
I want to have good memories, but all I can think about is him and Vicky. I hate the thought of her grieving for him. She has no right.
Lewis gets out of his car and heads up an overgrown garden path towards Justine's home. A bee flits across the fronds of a bush. As Lewis reaches for the knocker on the blue front door, it opens, and Justine hurries out past him.
You took your time.
You're expecting me?
Yeah, Reuben told me you'd come.
Lewis looks puzzled, then shakes his head and follows her. A policewoman stands guard as Justine sits in the gloom of the interview room at the police station, laying out tarot cards on the purple cloth. Lewis watches her through a two-way mirror from the observation room next door and flicks through her psychological profile records. Hathaway joins him.
Didn't find anything except for Polly Beatty. She's not in a good way. Is this the woman that killed the cats?
Yeah, she was arrested for burglary and criminal damage just under a year ago. She broke into a neighbour's house and lethally injected four cats. CPS decided not to prosecute because of her mental health issues at the time. Maybe she's had a relapse, turned her attention from cats to people.
Lewis leaves the observation room and joins Justine in the interview room. Hathaway gets a text on his mobile. Lewis sits opposite Justine as she patiently lays out her tarot cards.
Reuben came to me not long after he passed. He told me you'd need my help.
Justine, the questions I'm about to ask you have nothing at all to do with the spirit world. Do you understand?
I'm not stupid, Inspector.
We know that you visited Reuben on the day he died. Why was that?
I wanted to talk to my mother. My channels were blocked. I get angry, you see? No good for anyone. So I thought I'd try new blood. But he was no good. A charlatan with a fake name.
How did that make you feel when you found that out?
Disappointed. I told him so too. He won't tell me how he was killed.
He was given a lethal injection. Sound familiar?
I wasn't well.
What did you use to put your neighbour's cats to sleep?
I can't remember. I had blackouts. Days. Grief. Drink. Anger. It all broke down.
Who were you angry with?
I was my mother's sole carer for 25 years. She had cats, four of them. When she died, she gave them to the neighbour and everything else to Cat's Protection. Left me with nothing. I could hear them next door, mewling, taunting me. So I broke in. I did to those cats
what I wished I'd done to her. She let me down.
Reuben Beatty let you down.
And now I can't get rid of him.
You okay? Justine?
He's trying to tell me who killed him.
Lewis rolls his eyes.
There's a woman in danger.
Who?
Such anger in his office. Someone wants him to feel terrible fear. A woman. No. A man.
Justine, if you're trying to throw me off the scent here...
I know him. He's a psychic. Frank. McLean.
Lewis frowns at Justine. The building features a pair of cross doors and reads Walcombe College, Oxford, Boathouse. Inside, Vicky waits next to a row of long boats in a stack. Hathaway arrives.
Thanks for coming all the way out here at such short notice.
You're worried about being seen with me?
No offence, but you look like a policeman.
Oh, dear.
Promise me this stays off the record. That I'll be safe.
It's about Reuben. You want us to find whoever killed him, don't you?
She nods.
You loved him, didn't you?
3 weeks ago, I was asked by Professor Crane to help him devise an experiment for an external agency.
What sort of experiment?
Sleep deprivation. How it affects willpower, breaks it down.
And the external agency?
Let's just say there's military involvement.
Who's military? Ours, the state, private contractor? And for what purpose? Torture?
Vicky looks nervous as a couple of rowers comes in. She moves away from them, and Hathaway joins her at the main boathouse doors.
I honestly don't know. Reuben got wind of the project and told Crane he thought it was unethical. He was probably right, but I think he was just pissed off that Crane asked me to assist and not him.
Because he'd miss out on a fee.
It was more of an ego thing.
How did Crane feel about Reuben finding out?
Well, Reuben told Crane that if he didn't pull out of the project, he'd go to the department board with a complaint.
And that would have stopped the project?
I don't know. It might have been enough to jeopardise Crane's involvement.
So what are you telling me? Crane had Reuben killed in order to silence him?
You told me that Reuben was killed using two drugs, barbiturate and atorphin. Well, some barbiturates are used to form the basis of so-called truth drugs, used by intelligence organisations all over the world. Isn't it possible that they used that to find out what Reuben knew about the project and then killed him when they realised he knew too much?
Why didn't you tell me this before?
I've never felt this scared before. Some of us don't have the safety net of life after death.
Hathaway frowns.
I should go.
Gonna lift?
No. I can't be seen with you.
Vicky thrusts her hands into her jacket pockets and walks away. Hathaway turns stiffly to watch her go. Lewis parks his grey BMW saloon next to a low-slung Audi sports car in the paved drive of a converted church. He gets out of the car, thumbs his key fob to lock the Beamer, then heads up to the front door. He jabs the button of a camera entry phone. Inside, Frank hits a button on a laptop and Lewis's image appears on the display.
Hello?
Frank McLean.
He wants to know?
Detective Inspector Lewis.
You want to talk to me about Randolph James?
Yeah.
Present your warrant card to the camera.
Lewis shows his ID card and Frank buzzes him in. Inside, Lewis runs his fingertips across a glowing green relief mounted on a wall, then follows Frank to a lounge. Frank sinks onto a sofa.
Lovely place. Business is clearly good.
Yes, I've never subscribed to the belief that work should be its own reward. I much prefer actual money.
You must be very good at what you do.
Are the only creatures that are aware that life has a beginning, middle, and an end? Every life has a story, and for a small fee, I help my clients find a shape to theirs.
Using psychic ability.
Whatever you take me for, Inspector, don't take me for a fool. You and I both know that I'm one step up from the fairground. The skill lies in presenting the logical as mystical. For example, how did I know why you've come to see me? because I've got a notorious website on which I'm roundly critical of so-called fellow practitioners. And I also assume you've seen my latest blog post.
I haven't, actually.
Frank gets up from the tan-coloured sofa and Lewis follows him to the laptop. Frank taps a button and a website appears on the display. Lewis reads out a comment in purple lettering as Frank sits down again.
Randolph James, a terrific stage name that sadly wasn't matched by his cold reading skills.
Unless we maintain a certain standard, we all get tarred with the same crappy brush. Someone's got to sort the wheat from the chaff.
And that's you?
I don't trust anyone else in this world or the next.
I take it you know that Randolph James has been murdered?
I heard a whisper, yeah.
So when did you post this?
Frank awkwardly shifts his position on the sofa.
Tuesday night. If you didn't know about it, how come you're here? Did somebody point you in my direction?
I'm not at liberty to say.
Keith Poland. Liz Birkwood. Jodie Osborne. Justine Skinner.
Randolph James's real name was Reuben Beatty. How hostile did you really feel towards him, Mr. McLean?
Frank stares impassively at Lewis.
When did you visit him?
Well, I always go twice. The first to check them out and the second to confirm my first impression. I afforded Randolph the same courtesy, and then I destroyed him.
What?
Online.
Lewis calls Hathaway as he leaves Frank's.
Hi. I don't think Frank McLean's our killer. He needs phony psychics to prop up his self-esteem. How was your secret meeting?
Worrying. Meet you outside the Department of Psychology.
Yeah.
Lewis gets back into his Beamer and fires up the engine. Frank opens a side door and stands on the step watching. Lewis strides along the college corridor, passing wooden benches and memorial plaques mounted on the brownstone walls. He joins Hathaway, and they head up the stone steps together.
What's this about?
Crane was devising a secret military experiment. He wanted Vicky on board, but not Reuben. Reuben threatened to sabotage it.
What kind of experiment?
Which means that Crane, Vicky, or whoever Crane was working for had ample reason to want him out of the way.
Yeah, but what... Oh, isn't that... Yeah, that's Vicky. Vicky, can we talk? Vicky!
They spot Vicky in jogging sweats at the bottom of the stairs. She sees them, looks frightened, and runs out of the college. They head back downstairs and out onto the street.
Vicky!
Outside, she falls in with a group of joggers as they pass through a gate and down a path beside a college building. Lewis and Hathaway break into a run.
Vicky!
A jogger wearing a blue hoodie knocks Vicky to the ground with a forearm. The other joggers stop and look concerned as she collapses on a verge.
Look after her.
You're right.
Help me.
What's the matter?
Someone get an ambulance, please.
Lewis runs after the jogger in blue who escapes through a gate.
Tell me you'll be okay.
You'll be fine.
We get an ambulance, please.
Vicky tenses and struggles to breathe. Lewis hares up to the swing gate, but his path is blocked by people coming the opposite way. The jogger in blue runs down the lane beyond and vanishes around a corner.
I'm frightened. Pray with me.
Vicky clutches Hathaway's hand to her chest as he kneels at her side. Lewis returns and gently pushes aside a stunned young man in a sleeveless grey top. Vicky goes stiff, then relaxes and her head lolls to one side. Lewis and Hathaway stare incredulously down at her. ITFC audio description. Next time...
When she told me about Crane, she was scared for her life.
You know, we're no different, you and I.
Except your subjects aren't criminals or liars.
Anyone make out if they're male or female?
Why did you go to Reuben's office the day he was murdered?
Who's that?
The crop-haired man.
What do you want?
See anything?
Nothing.
Professor Crane!